Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Leon Kurtz, the CEO of Jubilee Metals, and resident analyst and financial journalist Charles Archer. Welcome, gents.
Good afternoon.
So, Charles, in a written piece titled Investing Strategy, the Jubilee Metals Edit, you recently illuminated Jubilee Metals' journey and its strategic positioning within the global demand for critical minerals, exploring how Jubilee, beyond its significant production of platinum group metals and chrome, is pivoting towards enhancing its copper operations in Zambia, a move anticipated to redefine its market value and operational footprint. You also highlighted Jubilee's transition from a period of financial stretching to becoming a revenue-generating and profitable entity, emphasizing its diversified operations across Zambia and South Africa as key to its resilience and growth potential. With an eye on the long-term horizon, we'll discuss implications of Jubilee's strategic moves for investors, the critical role of copper in the green transition, and how Jubilee's modular technology sets it apart in the rapidly evolving mining sector. So without further ado, I'll hand the floor to you, Charles. Enjoy.
Hi, Leon. How are you? What's your day been like so far today?
Hi, Charles. It's a typical day at the office. Many fronts are active, as you can imagine, in Jubilee. There's so much happening both in our South African and Zambian operations. It's been yet another exciting day in my life. Thank you.
Indeed. Well, it's all going on at the moment. You know, when I was writing the article, I thought, hang on, all these catalysts are coming all at the same time. And I'm going to ask you about a few of them, because I do have a few questions. So, okay, we'll start with the first one, because it's first in my mind. Rowan, I think this is kind of the thing that is probably top of investor minds at the moment. Are you on schedule to be commissioned and fully ramped up by the end of April, or is there going to be another little delay?
Oh, no, we're pushing with all the energy we've got, Charles, as you said accurately. Rowan is such a catalytic event in Zambia and in our copper operations. It's all hands on deck at the moment with that operation to get going, because there's so many things that it starts in our group. On the one hand, yes, catalytic in the sense of our sheer capacity and copper we'll be producing, but also it's such an innovative solution we're implementing that it's a bit of a spotlight from the industry on us to show how one takes these reefs into profitable copper. So in many ways, very, very keen and very, very focused in our group at the moment.
Ready to go by the end of April. You're pretty confident. Yes, good. Now, okay, so here's a question for you. So at the moment, copper is roughly just under 10% of your revenue streams. Once everything's up and running and ready to go on the copper front, how much is that going to increase in terms of percentages? Is it going to be 20% of the revenue, 30%? Well, you're not quite sure at the moment.
Well, it ramps up quickly. Of course, chrome is a very large revenue generator. And as we catch up on chrome continues to expand, as we told the market. You know, we're aiming to reach 2 million tons of product just in this year, end of this year for chrome. And that's not where it's stopping for chrome. So yes, if all things being equal, copper will come up to nearly 50% and 60% of our revenue, but then chrome expands again. But equally, our copper doesn't stand still. We have
not
many more plans beyond Rowan. Our vision is that we'll have, in the very near term, we'll have copper and chrome at equal revenues for the group.
Equal revenues. That is good. That is some huge amount of increase in revenue then, one would assume. Sable, the upgrade is Q3, isn't it? So between July and September. The upgrade happens. How quickly is it up and running at full capacity? Is that something that takes a few months, or is it something that's immediate?
It's quite immediate, because it's an upgrade to a particular circuit within Sable rather than in Rowan, where you're upgrading all of the front of the operation. This is just a particular stream that increases the amount of copper sulfide material we can process it. And therefore, your copper oxides are running. So a relatively small effect on the overall production schedule of Sable, and therefore quite quick to implement and ramp up. And it's a very key ramp up, because of what's happening outside of Rowan as well in Zambia.
Well, I mean, there was maybe you can shed some light on this, that there was in the news, in the media, nothing's been RNS, but there was rumors going around that Jubilee was thinking about buying other copper assets in the country, potentially a plant, which, you know, has been offline for a long time. Is that something you can expand on? Is that going on, or you can't say anything yet?
Well, the only thing I really can comment on is that as Jubilee, we are looking at a number of possibilities. As we expand and as Rowan comes to its full fruition and we're expanding outside of Rowan, Obi, you know, our waste rock project, small-scale mining like Monkoi, expanding of that, we hit the reality that Sable's footprint is full and fully utilized and can't really expand within that footprint. So naturally, as a company, we'll be looking towards, do we expand, do we acquire, or do we partner with other refining capacities in the country? So that's a natural part of the company. That we have to look beyond Sable being a sole refinery in Zambia.
So it's going to be at capacity pretty quickly, would you say?
Yeah, quite quickly. In fact, if you look at what we aim, is that it's not years, it's months before we hit a Sable that really is at all of its capacity and need to rethink where do we refine the remaining of our product.
I mean, beyond Sable and Rowan, you've got the joint venture with International Resources Holding, a very big Abu Dhabi company. It is the biggest, isn't it? I think it pretty much is. But you've got a 30%, you know, position in a joint venture. And the general idea is, you've got this massive area of copper waste rock assets. So you're looking at like 350 million tons. With grades at around, you know, higher than 1.5%. And I guess the question is, are you getting cracking? Is it concluded? What's the timelines to look out for with this one? Because it's a standalone project that should be revenue generating pretty much immediately.
Yeah, it's an exciting project. One can't doubt that. There's a lot happening on that project because the implementation and the process solution for that project is really in large part of it's a carbon copy of the front end upgrade to Rowan. It really is that ability to take waste rock and make it very quickly a high grade material that can be refined. So getting cracking on that is happening in the background as part of a fundraise last year. It was securing capacity to construct these front end facilities for that project. So one can expect a lot of news flow out of that project towards the end of March, that the news flow out of that project.
The end of March. This is now, is it not the end of March? Are you saying next week then? The week after?
Now, in Jubilee, every week feels like a year for many other companies. But yes, we're probably about 2 weeks away for the news flow out of that project to come forward in more detail on the size of the project, how we look to implement, how fast we look to implement on that project. There's a lot of work happening at the moment on that project.
Well, you're looking at 24,000 tons of copper a year at a cost below $4,000 a ton. And the CapEx, all of it is being funded by you know, through an SPV, $50 million. How did you get such a good deal? You know, is it just connections in the industry? Is it they were looking for the copper? It seems to be far better than what a lot of people in the space would be able to get.
Yeah, I think the deal is structured, and quite often a deal is about timing as well. It's not just all how brilliant or how great we are, but certainly there are two components. One is timing. It was in a strategic initiative the IRH is taking into Zambia specifically and into copper worldwide. Secondly, it recognizes the fact that what Jubilee is bringing is so unique. Our ability to roll out these modular plants is so well recognized now. The fact that we had sewn up even the manufacturing capacity to deliver those modules, those our ability to integrate and rapidly deploy these projects. And of course, the wealth of work that went into that project before we announced and brought it to market on design, testing through our development center inside of Jubilee. And we had the bank of Chrome that we could take companies to and show them how we've done it, how we've taken a company from 40,000 tons to 2 million tons of Chrome per annum. So that helped a lot. But in essence, it recognizes that this project can't be done without Jubilee. And therefore, with Jubilee, partnering with them, we're able to do it faster, bigger, and more successfully.
Well, I think if you prove it, that it works, right? I mean, it seems pretty confident. You've already got, you know, a lot of evidence already. Is this going to be the first of many contracts, of many joint ventures like this, spread out throughout Africa, this modular format?
It certainly gives that potential, yes. It gives it potential where it pictures where Jubilee plays within that environment. We are the solution provider. We implement and operate that solution, and we're able to take a significant position in that project, no matter how big it is. And so it does open up the potential for many such further transactions where Jubilee brings that solution and implements it as rapidly as it does. with a company that has aligned strategically, that has the muscle to enter into the copper space so aggressively, as, for example, the IRH has shown.
I'm just speculating here, but I know a lot of companies looking for copper in Zambia. There's so many tailing dumps in Zambia. At the moment, it's the hot place to be. I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I look at this and I go, once you are showing how well this works through this joint venture, there's going to be so many opportunities to just rinse and repeat again and again and again. The only other question I have with the copper, Munkoyo, I hope I pronounced that right. Again, you're wonderful. you were talking about applying ROM to Sable in Q4 2024. Again, is that on timeline?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
No, absolutely. I mean, Munkoyo is such an exciting project. And again, if we're doing Munkoyo for a number of reasons, much as we're doing this modular approach, Munkoyo is that example that absolutely replicates our success in South Africa, where we are unlocking reefs that people had thought were too complex or unrecoverable and have walked away from the opportunity. We come in for an exceptionally low entry cost into securing that opportunity, proving up the opportunity, and then rapidly deploying that opportunity. And there are many, many, many more Munkoyos in Zambia, these small-scale legal mining operations that are able to be implemented at scale and unlocked by a modular approach. Munkoyo is an extremely exciting project. And, you know, it's somewhere where, again, the company is focusing on, because it demonstrates so importantly to the industry that, yes, you can pursue the very large transactions out there, and which are many companies are. But if you've got five Munkoyos, you're the size of many large transactions at far lower risk and able to bring them into operation far, far quicker. And these are these overlooked opportunities within the reef that speaks to Jubilee's ability. Where we've now got OB1 or the OB transaction or the waste rock transaction, we are, you know, showing to the market Munkoyo is one of those again. Because if you then say you're looking at our waste rock projects, you're looking at our forgotten reefs, as you want to call it, both being able to scale significantly.
I want to move away from the copper now, because we've covered a fair bit of that. And while that is the definite growth area, or the biggest growth area, I would say maybe there's an image problem with Jubilee that you're kind of unfairly categorized as a platinum group metal producer versus a chrome producer. And obviously chrome has had a wonderful couple of years and platinum group metals have not. Would you say you're unfairly categorized? I mean, I looked at your business model. It seems that the platinum group metals are just a side product of the chrome production rather than the other way around.
Charles, I think often it is indirectly grouped or peer viewed, yes, with PGM companies. When we're not a PGM company.
No.
We are a copper company and a chrome company, and our byproduct of our chrome operations is our PGMs.
Yeah, exactly.
Therefore, our PGMs do not define our company's growth strategy, our company's earnings generating capability. Yes, of course, it's a beautiful byproduct to have when PGMs prices are up, but certainly doesn't determine the health of the South African operations and strategy. And if you look at our chrome, is growing at, you know,
crazy growth. I even looked at the numbers and I had to double check them with other sources because I couldn't quite trust them. But I mean, okay, full year 2020, your chrome capacity was roughly 378,000, and now you're planning 2 million. How have you gone so quickly that level of growth? I mean, yes, there's been some capital expenditure, but that's fairly impressive. Well, fairly, it's very impressive. How did you grow so fast over the past sort of 3 or 4 years?
Oh, thanks, Charles. And that's exactly and I love your question, because that speaks to what our plan is in Zambia. It was done modular, and that's the key. It's not one big chrome plant that delivers that. That's 10 chrome units that deliver that growth. And therefore, by replicating, you know, the sixth time or the seventh time, the eighth time, you have really got a blueprint design integrated with your manufacturers, the ability to train up your staff, get your focus and operational commissioning post-construction done. Everything becomes just business as usual, even the growth part. And that was the key. The first part was to identify those forgotten reefs we speak of and grow. Once they were identified and proven, you got to a point where the opportunities come to Jubilee and we didn't have to go hunt for them anymore. That's where chrome fortunately reached, where so many companies sitting on reefs, unable to unlock them profitably, and because of the complexity of the type of reef they had or the grades of that reef compared to what traditionally was expected, that they were drawn to Jubilee for the solution, and that allowed Jubilee to capitalize on that position. Where today, what Jubilee processes of that 2 million tons, there are very few companies, if any, that would be able to even process those beefs and recover chrome profitably. And that's the basis that has driven our growth. And that's carved out that unique position for Jubilee in South Africa, which we now look to do in copper. And that's also why the growth in chrome is still continuing, because there are so many of these, call it forgotten reefs in chrome, where people have moved to the higher grade reefs or have abandoned the shallow reefs because of the remaining grade and gone for an underground opportunity. And then not really realize that that chrome is not just recoverable, it's highly profitable.
If you have the right business model, if you have the capital expenditure, if you have, you know, what you have. I mean, obviously you process your own chrome and platinum and copper, but obviously you're doing other people's as well. That's a pretty good economic moat. That's going to help a lot. But I mean, you talk about like platinum group metals. Yes, it is just a side product. Amplats, which is the platinum arm of Anglo-American, it's cut nearly 4,000 jobs. It's kind of decided to give up on it at the moment. But you're still running profitably. How are you managing this when like a major, like Anglo, just can't do it? Is it still modular? You're going to give me the same answer. Go on, hit me.
To be honest with you, and I'd love to actually host you. No, sometimes people don't get it until they come and visit us. Yes, you can know your technology. Yes, you can know your solutions. Yes, you can have great teams, but we really operate well. So many companies have become distanced from their operations, and it's the ability to operate is such a fundamental component to mining. And if you lose that, it unfortunately hits you when prices fall. When your basket price is so low, then to react becomes very challenging. We run a very lean ship. We run a ship where information is fed openly, transparently to all of our suppliers and our services and our teams on the floor. So operationally, you marry your operational skill and management ability with that of your technological solution. Mm. And we just got that right. And that really is key, because else, you know, whether your price is high or low shouldn't be driving your view on efficiencies. You should always have your view on efficiencies irrespective of your basket price.
Of course.
And simply enjoy a better margin when the basket price is up. And that's fundamental. So there were no shockwaves through our company when the PGM price dropped. It simply highlighted the need to maintain the efficiencies we had enforced. And that might sound like a soft answer, but it's fact.
Well, that's fair. I mean, there's so much going into that answer that potentially you can't nail down concrete things. But I mean, it's not just Anglo. I mean, other operators in South Africa and just in Africa in general have given up. I mean, you can argue when the platinum group metals do increase and when, you know, chrome demand is going to continue increasing all the time, you're going to have even more of an advantage that you do now.
Because
your competitors are gone. Once you shut it down, it's a nightmare to get it back up again, right?
Oh, it's very challenging. Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're perfectly positioned to capitalize on a recovery in the PGM price. Yes, our cost to produce a PGM ounce is really low, if not the lowest. We are perfectly positioned in the sense that as we grow our chrome business, we naturally are expanding our PGM business on the back of that.
Yeah.
Because we're making more and more of that byproduct. Perfectly positioned to step into that market when the prices return and we're still standing and strong to supply those services to recover more chrome and more PGMs in an upswing in the market of PGMs.
So this is an interesting one, because again, I have to pronounce things and I don't know. Is it FTSE? T-H-U-T-S-E? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
Sorry? FTSE. FTSE. Oh, good. Maybe I should have more confidence in my pronunciation. But you said in November, And I believe you said anyway that the plan was to get two additional 50,000 ton per month modules online and running. And construction started on the first one in November. How's this going? When are they both going to be online? Relatively soon, or?
Yeah, quite soon. I mean, if you look at the production or construction cycle typically for that operation, you'd expect that we're roughly about 2.5 months away from getting that first one fully operational and running. And that's sort of the cycle in which we fall, even with the current logistical nightmares we have around the world, to implement and develop these projects and then commission them. And you're right, they're about 50,000 tons per module. Each 50,000 tons roughly adds about 350,000 tons additional product a year. And so it's a significant upgrade.
So, I mean, it costs $12 million is the number I found, but you're saying it's funded by the current Chrome operations. So yes. It's completely funded. So you're not going to come to the market in a couple of months' time and go, we need some cash for the modules. No. All done.
No, fine. So Jubilee PLC is in a fortunate position where when you look at our South African investments now self-funding, it's got its own balance sheet, it's got its own funding offtake partners. When you start producing 2 million tons of product, you attract the biggest and the best in the world as your clients. And with that comes their funding opportunities going forward. So no, PLC definitely is looking at a return on its investment at this stage.
So I want to move on now to finances, right? So you've had a half-year results relatively recently. A revenue went up 18.4%, 74.7 million. EBITDA was up 13.3%, but the profit was only 4.4 million. Now, obviously, we know that there's significant expansion going on in the company, and a lot of the capital expenditure that you had has now been spent and isn't going to get spent again. But that 4.4 million profit figure, do you think over the next sort of 6 months to a year, is that going to rise quite substantially? Or are you a little bit, at the mercy of the platinum prices at the
corporate? No. So if you unpack that profit.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm challenging you. Please let me know.
Oh, brilliant. No, I love the challenge. No, to unpack that, brilliant question. If you unpack that profit and you look at the key drivers of the profit, one is your margin on Chrome. So where is Jubilee growing rapidly at the moment? It's Chrome. The Chrome is coming through strongly. And what you see in the margin of Chrome is that the Chrome margin is growing double digits. And it's driven by the fact that we are growing in processing more and more of our own material. And therefore, one can expect the Chrome margin to continue to grow. And while the quantity of product we make also grows, you can therefore expect the earnings from Chrome to start playing a larger and larger...
As the margins improve, yeah.
As the margins are significantly improving. Equally, if you then step into the copper side, the copper last year faced the reality of a road stopping to commence the test work and upgrading of its front end. And therefore, copper was really only expected to come through and show its impact towards the latter part of this half year as it comes through the front end of Rowan being commissioned. So those are the two drivers of our earnings. PGMs, yes, it's down from previous periods, as can be expected with a plummeting PGM price, but it's still profitable. PGM prices have stabilized over this past quarter compared to previous quarters. So one can expect the PGM earnings to be relatively similar quarter on quarter or half year on half year. But one can definitely expect a uptick in both chrome and copper as the numbers reflect.
I mean, you would assume with Rowan being upgraded, it's running at a partial capacity. I mean, we would talk production numbers of copper of 600, 300 tons a month have been mentioned. What kind of volumes, obviously it's going to become irrelevant in the next kind of month or so, but what kind of copper volumes are going through Rowan at the moment?
So as we told the previous, at the moment, Rowan will come down quite a lot because the physical construction is there. It's not safe.
Obviously.
So when Rowan kicks back up to a 13,000 ton per annum facility, you're expecting just on about 1,000 and a bit coming through Rowan itself. So Rowan, as you rightly said, we cut it right back down to 50% and then down to about 40% of its capacity.
You have to. You don't have a choice.
You run safe. No, exactly, to keep it safe while upgrading the front part, because you're upgrading everything from electrical circuits to control circuits to water circuits, integrating them back into the existing facility before then steps up.
Well, I guess, you raised £13 million back in mid-December. Do you think now you're at a point where, this is what I think, but I guess I have the opportunity to ask you, are you at a point now where operations are now going to be fully funded? Just through operating, you're good, you're profitable, you're revenue generating. Do you think it's unlikely now that you'll need to place more shares in the near future, unless some incredible opportunity comes up?
Oh, quite correct. I mean, that's what we told the market. We raised that capital to accelerate our waste rock project, get that up and running on the back of concluding the transaction with IRH, and to secure that capacity for those plants to be operated. So
after something
grandiose and big out there, we definitely look forward to it for our Zambian operations to reach the point where our South African operations is already, and that is that self-funding, cash flow positive operational units.
You're expanding the FTSE modules, from your current revenue. There are many companies probably with larger market capitalizations than you currently have who would kill themselves to have that kind of an advantage in the market. Because people trying to raise at the moment are obviously having real problems. And it's great to hear that this is something that, you know, hopefully the days are over. Obviously, yes. the problem is, maybe not a problem, the opportunity in these markets, something will come up in Zambia and you'll go, we must have this. But other than that, you think, no, it's
yeah, no, remember, quite correct. And when we must have those opportunities, maybe that opportunity you must have, you don't need to have all of that. There's many ways of approaching and securing those opportunities without really coming to market for those.
So this is a question that someone, an investor sent me over. On 7th December 2023, you've got the interim results and it said there's 22 million warrants are currently open against the company.
Yes.
And I couldn't track these down, and probably because they're historical, but when were they issued? Why were they issued? What's going on with those? How long until they expire?
Yeah, so most of them are historical warrants that come from fundraisings 3 years ago coming to full fruition. Of those warrants, most of them would have expired by the end of this period, this calendar period. And so those are the warrants that have come back or has been issued from historical funding, not from current funding.
Okay. So are most of them on the verge of expiry? Yes. They're quite old, yeah. And what kind of the right prices do these have?
They vary depending on the age, but most of them are above market and some of them are nearly double off market.
Oh, okay. So, obviously you'll get money if they get exercised. And if you get to sort of 13, 14p, I'm sure nobody will be complaining.
Well, that's
good to hear. There's been some reports in the media, moving away from the finances again, from Zesco, load shedding in Zambia.
Yes.
How are you protected? Are you protected from this? Or is this a risk factor people need to be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, that is right. There are load shedding news flows out at the moment. Your protection in Zambia's first primary protection is to ensure that you are a national power user and not a local municipal level user, which we are. We were exposed to that nearly a year and a half, 2 years ago with Rowan, where we upgraded Rowan as well to being a direct supply from Zesco, which means that you have more of a guaranteed power supply.
Right.
It also means that when load shedding is implemented, that it really has to be a very high degree of load shedding before you are impacted as a guaranteed power supplier. That's the first part. The second part is, and it's part of our thinking, is to ensure that, as in South Africa, that our operations have secondary backup power. And that's something that we are considering for Zambia.
Put the words out of my mouth. Yeah, so I mean, I guess solar panels, you know, might be one choice. But do you have any kind of like plans in the near future? Once obviously yes, there's stuff going on at the moment, where you might want to not be as reliant on these power grids, which are not 100% reliable.
No, quite correct. I mean, South Africa, all of the operations have backup power systems. In Zambia, we definitely are looking at solar as an additional source because our distributed modular plants are power light. And therefore, they are the key critical facilities that you want to protect. And we're saved as an example as a refinery. We have primary protection through our direct relationship with Zesco. So our first rollout of backup power is towards our modular plants, where we look to package them with a solar panel or solar power. I mean, there's also a lot of secondary benefits to doing that. Normally, where you operate with your modular plants are often in more remote areas, and you're able to do more than just supply power to your modular units, but you can also supply to the area and to the communities. So there's a number of added benefits by investing into this backup power, which definitely, as you say, would be a very good backup system to have in Zambia, and because their power generation is so linked to the rainfall and the level of dams, because hydropower is by far the biggest power source or power generating source for Zambia.
So, okay, I'm going to wrap this up now because you've answered most of the questions very admirably.
Nothing.
Everyone wants to skirt one or two, but you've got to ask them all, even the difficult ones.
Yes.
Now, this is something I ask everybody that I interview. There's roughly 100 junior resource companies on the AIM market, and obviously hundreds and hundreds more around the world. And if you're an investor and you're looking at Jubilee Metals, and you've sold it to me already, so don't worry. But if you're listening in, this is me asking Leon, why should you invest in Jubilee over all of the other options out there? What is it that's your unique selling point where you go, this is what we do, this is why you should be investing in us?
Well, I would answer in two parts for you, Charles. The first part is the tough part of making and creating and establishing a business to a profitable status is behind us. That's a really challenging part in markets, to create something in mining that makes money and makes product and that has a sustainable future. That's the first part. That part Jubilee has succeeded in. And today, as you've seen our results year after year, we are a profitable company, sustainably so as well. The second and more important part is, why will you invest beyond getting past that challenge? Is because the industry and the metals we are in are not only strategic in copper, being a strategic metal of the future, in chrome, being fundamentally needed to make stainless steel, and everything we look at today that is shiny has chrome in it to make it stainless. And so we're in two strategic metals that are in high demand. And in both cases, we are in a position where we are not a miner. We are a metals recovery business, which is low capital, quick to expand, with a proven track record of how we will now implement and expand. So if ever you're going to invest in a company that's gone through the tough times, that is starting to face that catalytical point of extreme growth rather than just organic growth, that's the inflection point that we are reaching as Jubilee.
Yes.
And we finally deliver it.
Yes, and this is why I wrote an article, why I contacted you for an interview, because I think that you are now at that inflection point. You have got to that this issue where, realistically, over the past couple of years, you spent a lot of money on capital expenditure, which you needed to do, and now the money should, in theory, just roll in. And that's what I'd like to, you know, investors to take away. Anyway, Leon, it's been lovely to chat to you, and it's been great to hold your feet to the fire for that half an hour, 45 minutes or so. And I hope we can do this again in a few months' time.
Oh, no, thanks, Charles. It was great chatting, and thank you for the opportunity.
Wonderful.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.